Hellman on CliffCentral.com.
All right, let's say hello to the guys behind one of the coolest shows on television, Django. They're going to, because they're so accomplished, I'm going to give, and because they're writers and they're cinematographers and they're all these things, I'm going to, yeah, you don't have to have the headphones. Don't worry, worry, worry. I'm going to give both of you the task of introducing yourselves in the most poetic, cinematic kind of, in fact, you know what we're going to do? You're going to introduce each other in your best movie trailer voice and dish as much dirt on one another as you possibly can in that intro. Let's kick it off with you, Nick.
Sure. Tonight on E! Directed by Gareth Crocker. Written by Gareth Crocker. A story about a young man. Sure, I don't know. Gareth, cool. He's a writer. He directs the show. All-around kind of crazy guy. Likes his football.
Man United.
Team not doing so well, but as an Arsenal fan, I can't really comment too much at the moment. So, yeah, I don't know what else to say about this guy. I'm going to let him have a go, and hopefully my brain engages here a little.
Yeah, so Nick, I've been working with the guy for 3 years, still don't quite know how to pronounce his surname. It's Coulemans.
Close enough.
So Nick is...
What is it? You won't tell anyone what it is.
It's actually pronounced Coulemans. It's Dutch.
Coulemans.
But because we live in South Africa and we have a bit of Afrikaans influence, it's Coulemans to most people. So actually, I pronounce it Coulemans because it's actually easier for people to get the actual... Otherwise, it's spelled like Cola, Coca-Cola, and...
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
It's just... tricky.
So Nick wears many hats on the show. He's our cinematographer. He's an artist. And he also handles all our special effects, does a lot of editing. You know, or in South African filmmaking, you know, small teams, you have to, you know, you can't just specialize in one thing. So, yeah, we do all sorts of things together.
My real claim to fame, though, is actually the voice of Bradley in the show. That's my real part.
He speaks to your character.
I actually speak to you, Aria, on the show. So that's my voice, my real key contribution.
I think what's so fantastic, and we got to experience working with you guys when we shot some scenes for the show, is that in every interaction with you, in everything around this production, in every email that I've received from you, there's been like two, but still, you are just so wildly passionate about this medium of film and of television and of really the entire process. This cast and crew have worked so hard on every aspect of a production. You know, people don't realize that some people will do one thing in a production. Their job is literally to put the food on the set or to, you know, operate camera one or whatever it is. But this team, everybody has just been so integrated in every aspect of the production. It's truly, to you guys, must symbolize what the word collaboration means, right? When you look back on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the challenges is to not kill each other half the time. Because, I mean, you know, obviously it gets quite pressured. You know, 3 o'clock in the morning, you've got three more scenes to shoot. Everyone's at each other's necks. I mean, we're a very close team. But, you know, it's serious stuff. We've got investors' money on the line. So we've got to put together a good show. But it's been a hell of a ride, I must say.
Yeah, definitely the collaboration. I think it's very different, our approach to making Django. It has been very different because of the way we work. And it's kind of come together in a very unique type of way, and because everyone has a little part in everything, it sometimes it works, sometimes, like Gareth was saying, sometimes it doesn't work, but yeah, sure, very different.
It is Africa's first superhero TV series. It's a really, really big deal. I mean, talk to me about the initial interactions that you had with the project, which to you, I mean, first of all, how long ago was that you had your initial exposure to the project? Is it almost like a where and when kind of thing when you first cottoned on to this idea or thought that you might be part of it?
Yeah, so we've got, I'm going to out him now, we've got this mad partner, Fred Vollmerans. And there's four of us in the business, we own the business, and our investor, Mr. Chris Lawrence, we love you, Chris. Anyway, he's listening right now. So we're sitting around the table and we had done lots of kind of brand stuff for big companies and so on, and we wanted to branch onto television. Myself and Fred, we'd made a film together called Taken. It stars Liam Neeson. I'm not sure if it's not that Taken. It's another Taken, but it's very close in quality.
It was the original Taken.
It was the original Taken. That's still our title. But we're sitting around the table. We wanted to go into television. We had a few ideas, a sports show, and I thought maybe we should do like a haunted houses sort of thing. And we were going around the table. Fred said, why don't we make Africa's first ever superhero TV show? Now, Ari, you can imagine. I mean, we're a small, very small company, limited resources, competing with Marvel and these guys. I mean, it's just this crazy idea on the surface. I think the more we interrogated it, and we thought, how could we do it in a different way, a more kind of personal way? So instead of having cities explode every 5 seconds, you've got characters, like an interpersonal view of a character going through a tough journey, what it's like to be in his shoes. So it's a very close, kind of intimate portrayal of the superhero character. So, you know, many, many months of thinking and planning and writing and rewriting and so on, and eventually got this Django brand, I guess. And we're really excited. We hope people are gonna love it.
Yeah, I think another big thing behind the show was to try and create some kind of South African content that was different. You know, a lot of the stories that are told in South African cinema and television that are all kind of similar and along the same lines. We just wanted to create something really lighthearted and fun and something fun at the end of the day, you know, like in superhero genre really speaks to that. It's something fun that everyone can engage with, different ages, all kinds of walks of life can get involved.
I think our investor, Chris, made a very good point. When he came on board, he said, look, guys, I don't want us to you know, have a go about South Africa. I mean, there's so many other productions that do that so often, even in great films like District 9 that people loved. I mean, if one looks at the country in that film, it looks horrid, you know. And look, I know it's kind of supposed to look like that, but we wanted a different approach. So we wanted to show some of the beautiful vistas. You know, we with one scene, I think we shot in a penthouse, which is worth 27 million, whatever it is. It's contact of ours. And I mean, it's just awe-inspiring when you're up there. We shot on top of roofs. We were in caves, wonderful, wonderful places. And I think it's an opportunity to showcase the country a bit.
Absolutely, and it does it beautifully in the show. One often watches, like, you know, these big series, the American series, a series like this, and you just wonder, like, how do a collective of people come together to really create that? What is the inspiration that strikes? It's, you know, there was nothing before, and then they come out with, like, you know, like a Game of Thrones, or you come out with, like, a Django. It's actually quite a magical thing when you look back on it. How much of this for you guys in the first season, in these eight episodes in the first season, was learn as you do and create on the spot versus sitting down and planning and planning and planning? At what point do you stop planning and do you start rolling?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question, Ari. Thanks for asking it, because it's one of the things that, you know, you almost need an audience to come with you on a journey. If we want to shoot like 5 seasons of Django, say, it's hell of a nice if the audience can understand the kind of humble beginnings and how we're building it. And if people can kind of hold back on the trolling and the criticism for now, just come with us. I mean, it was definitely film school for us. I mean, we've got some experience in creating narrative. I mean, I'm a novelist, so I write books, so I'm kind of used to the story.
Sold over a million copies.
Well, I was hoping you'd say that.
in 20 countries worldwide.
But Ari, it's a completely different format. You know, so I had to learn how to kind of write screenplays, and I definitely didn't get it 100% right. First off, 100%, got lots of things wrong. I mean, Nick and I over lunch, we had a 2-hour lunch before we came here. We were talking about all the things we got wrong. And I think that's the point. It was learning. You know, we got an opportunity now to hopefully do a season 2. And if people can just forgive us a little bit, you know, just be our mate, come along on the journey, watch season 1. And we think by season 2, we'll have something very good to watch.
I think to get back to your original question, most of it was winging it and learning it as we went along. There was always a plan, but we didn't always stick to the plan. Just making it up as you go along and collaborating on stuff, ideas, and going with the flow. And
because we don't have the luxury of sets. So what most people don't really understand, you know, what happens behind the scenes. You know, if you haven't built a massive soundstage set and, you know, friends, you've got a controlled environment, we don't have that. So we've asked a mate if we can use an apartment for 3 hours, and all of a sudden he comes home early and you've got to get your scene done in 15 minutes. So there's lots of those challenges, and they happen at the spur of the moment. The power goes out, you can't run your big lights. There's all sorts of things that small productions need to kind of cope with. But I think one of the strengths of the team is that we've got some very quick thinkers in this. I'm not one of them. Nick, Fred, and Phil, they're very, very quick thinkers. So we've managed to get our way, you know, shoot our way out of some very tricky circumstances.
I mean, to mount something like this is crazy. And one almost wonders, you know, how do you even have the foresight to think, what if this thing did go for 5 seasons? Which you kind of have to have in the beginning. And in putting season 1 together, you would have had to have some sort of inkling of what a season 5 finale might look like. I mean... Is that part of it? Did you shoot sort of for one season, or did you really have this over-encompassing idea in mind?
I think the dream is always to go on, and you want it to go to 5 seasons. But you do have to be realistic as well. It is a pretty bold thing that we tried out. We didn't know whether it was going to succeed straight off the bat. We still don't know to what extent it could succeed. So yeah, you got to kind of curb your enthusiasm a little bit with a bit of realism. But I think we could come up with a couple of ideas for season 5.
I think one of the main, you know, from the writing perspective, one of the main problems that most superhero stories face is let's talk a film for argument's sake. So if you're doing, you know, Captain America, and in your film he saves the universe from destruction, kind of where do you take the second film? Where do you take the third film? So our challenge is definitely So it's always the case, you don't write yourself into a corner where the sequel or the sequel to the sequel is a much watered down version of your first film. So there are those challenges, but no, I think we imaginative enough to come up with all sorts of stuff. We've got some ideas for season 2 and 3, and we hope it's got the legs for that.
Yeah, we hope it gets there and people can see what we've
So don't troll us, man. Don't troll us.
This is the thing. When it comes to commercializing a project like this and turning it into a business so that it can have a second and a third season and that kind of thing, for you guys, what's been the most interesting learning over the past couple of months in terms of how the business of a television series works?
Yeah. There's Nicole. You go first.
Sure. The most fascinating thing for me is I think every time you're kind of setting up its own little business. So even if we did a season 2, that would be, we had this business, we kind of made it to succeed to whatever point, we kind of break it down and then start another business. And it's, filmmaking is that, like, all of the parts are like your actors or your staff, you've got your people you're filming, everything is, it's just such a complex
entity.
So that was a big learning curve. How to direct the people, how to manage the people. I mean, we had like some filmmaking knowledge and some writing knowledge, Gareth's, all of his writing knowledge from his books, and that kind of thing. But learning how to manage the people and bring it all together and just get the best out of everyone as well. I think that's been the biggest learning curve for me.
I think what is very surprising for us is that there's a huge difference when a channel like ETV or SABC or whoever it is, if they commission the show and they put the show together, the amount of money they'll put into that show is quite sizable. But if they're buying your product off the shelf, which they're doing in our case, because we're an independent little company, it's like a massive, massive difference. So to give an idea of Jongo, the show, we couldn't even recoup, I would say, 5-10% of our costs through the South African market. So Jongo has to succeed internationally in order for there to be a season 2. And fortunately, we're looking quite decent. We've sold to quite a number of other countries and so on. So it looks like it's financially feasible, but it's not a slam dunk. It's not like, oh, yeah, well, of course, you made a show, let's do another one, you know?
Figuring that out, though, must just be such a process. It's not like you can go into Google and say, where can I sell Jongo?
No, exactly. And there's no one you can kind of turn to, because what we're doing is...
so unique, yeah.
It's kind of breaking the mold. And
I mean, what we had to do is get an investor on board, someone with a bit of vision or someone lots of money and very, very silly, Chris Lawrence, and nobody's willing to come on board with us and not have all the answers, but wanting to have the adventure and find out all these things. So all along the way, we'd find out like what sort of government grants you could get, how to get a distributor. Myself and Chris hopped on a plane, went off to Cannes in France. We went to this big festival. We were there for the wrong reason, but then eventually we figured out we needed a distributor. So we got one from Holland and so on and so forth. But there definitely was no manual.
Otherwise, everybody would be doing it. Right. So talk to me about the payoff when this thing actually goes on TV.
Oh, it's not a payoff. Okay, sure. From my perspective...
Gareth is terrified.
That's harrowing.
Really?
Yeah, you know, it's a weird thing. It's... you know that you it's kind of writing with oven mitts on, because there's just so many limitations. The limitations of budget, of acting, actors available to us, I guess, of time, of my ability as a director, as a writer. So you hamstrung from the word go. And people who go onto the channel to watch a show, they have no idea of all the limitations behind the scenes. They're just judging the show on what they see. So they've watched Spider-Man last night. Oh, tonight they'll watch Jongo. The fact that Jongo cost, you know, I mean, an absolute fraction of the title sequence of Spider-Man.
Spider suit, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, that's tough, because then people say, oh, you know, that's just rubbish. And you feel like, but you just don't understand the whole story. But by the same token, the show needs to stand on its own feet, and we understand that. So our challenge is to get it to the right level.
And I think this is the first time you put out any kind of creative thing. You're putting out a little bit of what you think is cool, what you believe in, and you're putting yourself out there. At least with a TV show, and this kind of project, you're putting yourself out there with a couple of other guys.
Yeah.
Not like Gareth and his books, where it's just him when they suck.
They don't suck, by the way.
They don't suck. All the old ladies in Broadacres love him. So you're putting a bit of yourself out there, and a bit of all of us out there. So you hope people will like it, and the that they'll take to it.
Because yeah, exactly.
It is quite personal to a certain extent, you know.
Yeah.
Look, what you guys are doing is fantastic. Every production company I ever speak to in a South African context always says, oh no, but we should be making our own stuff and then licensing it out. And then they sit year on year waiting for the SABC to commission shows for them.
Exactly.
And they get upset that they don't own it and everything. So it's really great. And it's crazy that it's taken up until 2016 for somebody to really go. I mean, people have probably done it before, but certainly the scale of this is a great scale. And actually just said, you know what, we're just going to actually go and make this thing and then kind of, you know, throw caution to the wind and figure out how exactly you get this thing to spread. To people that want to change up the industry, to people that want South Africa to be in a Hollywood league, to the people that sit on the sidelines and say, oh, but we should do this, we should do that. What would your message to those people be in terms of really transforming the South African film and TV industry into one that is less reliant really on like a handful of media companies?
I think they've got to, I know it sounds so cliched, but you've got to go out and do it. You've got to go out and film stuff and just make the content and put it out there. I think that's what's so unique in this day and age with the cost of cameras, the cost of equipment, the cost of all of this stuff is coming down, and it is achievable. It's in your range. I mean, there's movies being made on iPhones that are winning awards overseas at the film festivals and stuff like that. You know, just go out there and make it. Tell great stories. Put yourself out there. And the more people that do and the more people that engage with these stories, the more the industry will grow. And be positive, you know, back the guys.
Yeah, be positive. You know, don't go and diss your fellow filmmakers. Don't go say, oh, well, that film's rubbish. You know, we're the only people who can make decent content. I think it's more a case of get to know them, have a chat to them, see how you can help each other. You know, it's a small community and we definitely should be supporting each other.
Get behind people. The whole media kind of industry in this country, all of it, you just got to get behind each other and push it like they do in Hollywood. I mean, they...
Like Cliff Central got behind us, man. Exactly. Yeah.
Boom,
like
there you go.
Yes.
We're going to wrap this up with one of the stars of Django, Katleho Molai, telling us what she thinks of the show because she's been following it from a very objective standpoint, even though she's in some of the episodes. Producer Kat, you've been watching Django. What are your thoughts?
I'm not the star. You're the star.
One of them.
I was the star next to the star.
I thought you did a fantastic job.
Yeah, you did a really good job, yeah.
It was so weird, like, watching myself. But anyway, I thought it was shot really well. There was, like, stuff I saw that I was like, how did they do that? Like, when he threw up the plane, which is the clip we talk about in our scene. And, like, when he flies from building to building, I'm like, how do you do that? So that stuff was cool for me. So, yeah, I think you guys did really good. And I can't wait for season two. And I hope you guys put us in season two.
we'll have to. I mean, the voice of charged? Bradley has to make another appearance.
Exactly. There you go. Listen, it's been so cool having you guys in. It's on ETV now, right?
Tonight, Hop Us 8, for sure. Yeah.
Very, very cool. Yeah. And that's just going to blow the lid off the whole thing. Because you're going out to millions of people tonight. That's really, really exciting. Who are you going to be watching with, even though you've seen this episode 1,000 times?
No, I won't be watching it. I'll be watching the sport of saying, no, I can't. And I just start obsessing about the trolls. And you know, for people listening, look, tonight's show, just as the way it kind of cut together, and this is an excuse, but seriously, from episode 2, things really cook up.
Just, so why don't you just let people watch it, guys? Why don't you just let people watch it and make their own mind up?
Trying to make excuses, Nick.
No, that's great. It's going to be great. You going to be watching it with anybody, Nick?
I will probably be watching it at home with my wife, if I do flick it on, but I could recite that entire show.
Yeah, we all
along
could.
With
we
the
all
actors. I've seen it so many times.
Listen, it's fantastic. I think that what you're doing is so cool, and it's the start of something really, really awesome. You're probably going to go on to make many, many productions. And it takes a lot of balls, so kudos to you guys for putting this whole thing together. That there is a Gareth Crocker, who, by the way, has sold more than 1 million copies in 20 countries.
That completely skipped my mind when I was introducing him.
Hey, it's very, very impressive.
You know, Ari, can I just say something? You can actually claim that, but no one ever goes and checks. So I could say 10 million. It's great.
It's okay, bro. My 16 million listeners right now, they'll double check for me. That's Gareth there, and of course, Nick Coleman. Thank you so much for stopping by. Django is on ETV tonight. Guys, really well done. It's a power project.
Thanks very much.
The Jersey Urban Trail and Obstacle Run is back on the 28th of May. Challenge your friends. Challenge your family. Enter the 12 or 18 kilometer adventure or 6 kilometer fun run. Whether you want the scenic route or the adventurous route, the choice is yours. With nothing stopping you, it's go time. The Hollard Jura. brought to you by AdReach and Joburg City Parks and Zoo. Enter at jawsyadventure.co.za.
One night of insomnia, plus, multiplied by, plus, multiplied by, plus,
wrong number.
Plus, plus, multiplied by, divided by, plus,
Janet,
to the power of your name is actually Alice, equals the irritation of just one single mosquito buzzing around your head. Fortunately, you plus peaceful sleep room spray equals death to that irritation.
Kelman on CliffCentral.com.